Awesome. How are y'all doing today? Good? Good, good. Glad to hear. The weather is awesome, right? Very nice. I see some coats, some scarves, some cardigans. What other words? Sweaters? Boots? Lots of boots?
Uggs.
I'm not wearing any of those things. Sorry. I'm not trendy enough. But yeah, I love this weather. I love when it starts getting cool before it gets too cold, because, you know, in our humidity here in Houston, it turns to ice. And we have ice storms. We don't have snow. We have ice storms. And we tell people up north about it, and they don't understand our struggles. When this comes around, it always makes me think about baseball. Growing up, I always played baseball. It was like our family sport. My brother that is here, he can attest to that. And we loved it. It's just something about getting out there in the cool weather and just, you know, getting hit in the hand with a rock of a ball that, you know, makes your hand go dead. You know, just something about it. I don't know. But no, it's a lot of fun to get out there, and it's not too hot to play. And it always makes me think about baseball in this time. And I loved it. I pitched. I played first. I played second. You know, I played all around. And I was awesome. I was amazing. I had to turn down the Astros, and no, that didn't happen at all. I was average at best, but I had a lot of fun. So it wasn't exactly my skills and talent that really made it like that awesome for me, because I failed more than I succeeded. And I know that's normal for baseball, but even in baseball terms, I failed more than I succeeded. And but what made it great was the team atmosphere of it. The coming together with a group of guys, and because there's no I in team, you know, which always not funny because there's me in team, but I didn't speak up, I was scared of coaches. They make you run if you do that, say, talk back to them. Did a lot of running in the baseball program, but you have to have multiple people on the field to do it, and you have to be in sync. So there's something about doing this together, getting on the field and being a part of something bigger. And we all had our own parts to play, our own positions to play. And sometimes you played multiple positions. Sometimes you switched out. And each was key to succeed and to win the game. The Astros are doing a lot better at it this year. The past year is not so good. But they're coming together and they're gelling. And what you're seeing, what they did, it was like this five-year plan that they had to try to get to the World Series, which they're close. It's kind of like I wouldn't say a money ball situation, but they got a lot of young players that had a lot of talent that were raw, and there's talent all over the major leagues. And so what they did is they took these young players and they put them together. And they knew after a period of time of playing together and not leaving to go to different teams, they would gel. They had the talent to do it, but they had to gel together to become better than everybody else, to become a better team. And that's what you're seeing. That's what you saw this past season, is that they're gelling together. They become, you know, they're communicating better. They're playing their spots better. So there's just something about that's exciting about seeing a group of people in one mind but playing different parts going after one thing. Super cool. One of the cool things about my baseball experience was growing up, I had this trainer. He was a professional. You know, I'd say his name, but a lot of you probably didn't know him, but he was like a home run hitting champion in like 1985, the year I was born. He played in Tokyo a lot, and he was just really good at what he did. His son, son played at Klein. He actually went to the majors and all this stuff. Really cool to just be around them, because I was nowhere near as talented or anything like that. But so my dad, God bless him, he spent a lot of money on lessons for me and my brothers, and it was just something fun. It was our hobby. It's what we did. That's what we spent money on, is we did baseball lessons and things like that. So I would go to these baseball lessons, and they weren't cheap. But the cool thing about this guy that taught me, his name was Jesse, was that he got a lot of people. He had a lot of people in there, a lot of people he learned from. But it's how he taught what made him so good. Because I was just average. I was an average teenager. You know, I was smarter than all of them, but I was average as far as my talents and abilities went. I could outthink somebody, but I just sometimes somebody could throw harder. Some people were just born with freak arms and, you know, and legs that just run faster than cheetahs and all that. And so, but he knew how to take ordinary and make it extraordinary. He figured out what your specific quality was, and he did this by filming. This was before pre-iPhones and all that. So, like, he had this camera set up that the tape, you know. Kids, they don't know what that is in the back. They don't know what these things are. But he would record each session, and he would set it up, and he record it, and he would talk to you. He would just kind of shoot the breeze, and he would, like, have all these things that you do, and he would hang out with me. And then afterwards, we'd look at the tape. We'd look at the video, and he says, like, all right. So he starts then, like, pinpointing things. He's like, oh, look, you know, you kind of, your leg's not doing right there, or you're not following through. And I can go on the technical stuff, but I would lose all y'all. All these things, and before I knew it, after a couple of visits, I began to do better than I had ever done before, and it was kind of like mind-boggling. Like, how does he do this? You know, and I did way better with him than I did with anybody else, and quality of that was way above average, and I had it in me that I could do it. But he figured out the cool thing about him was he figured out how to speak to me. He figured out how to get on my level and talk about the things that I want to talk about. He even had little contests that he would do that at the very end. He would pitch, and if I hit it, or if I hit it in the right direction so many times, either he loses or I lose. And the loser had to get the big old 32-ounce Smoothie King for the other at the next visit. And so I bought a lot of Smoothie Kings for him, and I was keeping him supplied. And he had a specific flavor, and when I'd show up with it, he's so good. You know, he'd rub it in my face, and he knew how to speak to me. He knew how to hit on my level and communicate to me in a way that I understood, and he was able to draw more out of me because of that, and make something greater out of me. And there was times that when I was working with him, I did things that I didn't even realize I was doing. Like hitting home runs back to back and not even knowing that I did it. I was so focused on him and what he's telling me to do that I didn't know what I was even achieving in the moment. Super cool just how effective he was in communicating to a messy teenager. He was willing to dive into a messy teenager's brain and life and say, all right, let's pull out the good things. Let's leave all the other stuff to school, all this other disappointment that you had in the baseball program. Let's forget about all of that. Let's pinpoint on these things. He learned how to communicate me, and because of that, he was very effective in what he did. Obviously, he was a major league baseball hitting coach. He helped Alex Rodriguez. He helped all these big names, Derek Jeter, all these big names in hitting. He knew how to speak to them on multiple different levels and different age groups. Super cool. And so it was a great opportunity to learn that. And so I didn't realize it then. It wasn't until later in life that I realized how effective he was in doing it. And I kind of took some of the things that he did and attributes implied it. So I bet that a lot of you have those type of people in your life. Those type of people that when you were young growing up and you're impressionable and you're trying to figure out which way to go, that they begin to influence you in ways and speak to you in ways that you understood and begin to help you. Teachers, parents, grandparents, friends at school. I'm sure you're thinking of that person. We all have either that person or people in our lives, and they hit a specific point, and they learned how to communicate to you, whether it was through a hobby, through a situation, going to the movies, you know, all these things. They learned what do you like, and they figured out what you want. this is something the media is very good at. They figured it out, and this has nothing to do with my sermon, but I thought it was kind of funny. I saw the uproar. I didn't realize what it was until Hannah explained it to me. It was so dumb. the Starbucks thing. I'm sure some of y'all have seen it. The Starbucks cup, how it's the attack on Christians because they didn't put ornaments on the cups. You got to be kidding me. Normally they decorate it, I guess. Never even noticed it. And would put, like, holiday things on it. And so they just went with a red cup this year. And it's like an attack or something. It's so dumb. But that's just how powerful the media is, because it's like one person got upset, one Christian out there has their drawers in a wad, and starts flooding Facebook with all this stuff, and then like social media takes over, and it turns into this monster. Lawyers are getting hired, and you know, all this stuff over stupid design, and it just goes to show you how powerful it can be. Movies, like, you know, I'm not trying to say, like, all the bad stuff, but, like, you know, like, when a Marvel movie comes out, people lose their mind, you know, and it's, I love Marvel, it's awesome, I lose my mind too about it, and so things like that happen, you know, and then certain TV shows, like, you know that, like, a large majority of the United States is going to be out of order because they're watching whatever TV show this is, whether it's American Idol or whatever, it's just how powerful the media is, and they know how to speak to you. They figured out how to talk to America. One of the ones that I thought is amazing, Jimmy Fallon. Anybody Jimmy Fallon fans? Very entertaining. So I would say my generation was the last at the point, one of the last generations that was interested in late night talk shows. People that were younger than me, it was not really their thing. And it's because the guys that were running it were old, but their ways were old. The ways they did things were appealing to an older crowd. And so when Jimmy came along, he took over the Late Late Show, right? Late Late Show, is that what it was? Yeah, that's close enough. He figured out a way to speak to a new generation. So he involved Twitter. He involved Facebook. He involved all these things and hit topics and things that they want to talk about and not make it, that's the whole show, because any age can watch it. But he figured out, how do I speak to this demographic? And it's exploded the late night scene again. People are very interested in late night shows. Every time it's very funny, his Twitter has hashtags, calls it hashtag, is a hashtag the panda. He's not here today, so don't look for him. He's not going to come out dancing. I should have done that. Why didn't I do that? Oh, that would have been awesome. Ideas later. So he puts a hashtag and he's like, hey, go do this and we'll put on the show. Every time he does it, it's instantly like a nationwide or a worldwide trending topic. He's gotten so effective at it. It's because he's figured out what they want. He figured out how to talk to them in a way that they understand, with the lip-syncing battles and all that stuff. It's just craziness. It's so cool. And one of the things I appreciate is he takes these artists or entertainers or actors, he takes these older actors that the younger generation might not know, and he puts them into games that kind of take them out of their element, and so then people get to know them on, it feels like you know who they are because you've seen them in an element that's not normal. So you see them exposed in different ways, and it's super cool, like the telephone booths where you have to like shove people in a telephone booth. I think they did it with Shaquille O'Neal one time. And it's super funny, and it's just hilarious to see. And it's small things, but it's very effective in what he does. So as far as the what, that always changes, and it's always new, and they're always finding out. But as far as the ability to do that, the practice of communicating in that way is nothing new. It's something that's also been happening for a long time, and very community-driven. It's taking a new concept or an old concept and communicating it in a new way for a new crowd to hear about. We find this happening in John. In his account, this is a very famous account. Grab my water here. A lot of you that you know that very well, it's the woman at the well. See, in this time, Jesus was traveling and doing his thing, doing his gospel. He was ministry happening, letting people know who he was. And he came up to this situation. And let me just set the stage for what this is and why she says what she says. Jews thought they were better than Samaritans, regular people. And so they did not speak to them. It was a big social faux pas to talk to them, just like I'm sure on Facebook it's a social faux pas to comment or do something weird. It was like, you don't do that. You don't speak to them. It's lower than you, kind of a thing. And so Jesus takes this opportunity. It's kind of an attention grabber. It's in John 4:7-15. This is what it is. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you," like I can hear the sarcasm, "how is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria?" He's like, you clearly don't understand the situation, is what she's saying. "For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying it to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." So now he's kind of like getting the woman's attention. So he's like, "If you only knew who I was, you would be asking me for this." And so he's got her attention. He's speaking to her a way that she understands. And the woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water." Very significant situation here. There was huge walls between Jews and Samaritans. Huge walls. Like, she's like, "Do you even realize? It's not even, 'Oh, hello. I'm not going to, I know who you are. I know that you're Jewish. Why are you talking to me?'" It was an immediate cutoff. Big wall there. And Jesus, just as skillful he was, he was Jesus, he was God, so he was all-knowing and all-powerful. He navigated over that wall or broke it down instantly in the way that he did this. So what's significant in how he approached her, first, is Jesus traveled to people. In that time, religion and Jews and all that, it was very come to me. You have to come to this temple to hear about God, and then you get what you need, you leave, and then you come back again. You know, it's a very come to me situation. So Jesus, in his first step in ministry, going to people, was revolutionary. He was a traveling ministry. That didn't happen back then. And so he knew that the people that felt that they weren't worthy, that they weren't, you know, good enough to come to those areas, they weren't going to come. But he knew that his water was better than any water that they could ever have, and they needed it. So he went to them. That was the first thing he did. He traveled to them. He found them on their ground, on their turf. It's very powerful. Then he spoke in a way that she could understand. So she was there to get water at the well. That was obviously her job. That was her thing. That's what she did. And so he spoke to her about water. Now, if he would have started talking about something that was in Jewish faith or something like that, she would not have understood at all. It would have been foreign to her. So he talked to her about water. He used that as an example. So he found something that she was interested in and then showed that this interests me as well. We find common ground here. And so then he was able to communicate to her in a way that she could understand. And then the third thing he did was he crossed boundaries. So there's this book I read. It's called Powerful Conversations. It's an older book. It's very good. If you find yourself struggling with how to communicate with people in just regular conversations and get your stuff apart and get what you want to say across, read this book. But in this book, it talks about how do you get past the wall? Because everybody has a wall, a comfort level. They have a bubble, and they say, "I'll let you come this far, but that's it. Any further, I'm not interested what you're selling or anything like that." But everybody has a wall. And sometimes, like, some walls are good. Don't get me wrong. There's some areas that you shouldn't let people as part of, just walk in on. But there are some things that we build up walls just for our comfort. It's for our, because we find ourselves in an uncomfortable situation. It's not really that it has to be uncomfortable. It's just that we don't want to be uncomfortable. So we look for ways to be comfortable, which is kind of a dangerous thing. Because when we get into a comfortable cycle, we begin to forget about people. And so Jesus first made himself vulnerable. He's like, he didn't have anything to drink. He's obviously in need. He's kind of like, she's like, "Okay, where's your cup? You don't have anything. Like, you came to a well with nothing, and it's deep. What, are you going to climb down there and go get it and take a drink?" She's kind of like, he kind of left himself out there. He's like, "All right, I'm going to be vulnerable. I'm going to seem like I don't know what I'm talking about for this moment." And so because of that, he was able to break down that wall of awkwardness, that wall of let's get uncomfortable. Let's hash it out. Let's throw it out there. If you've ever sat in a counseling session or seen a psychiatrist or anything like that, they do this to you. This is something that they try to do pretty quick, because once you get past that level, once you get pop that bubble, then you can get to the real thing. In this book, Powerful Conversations, it talks about I think it's the untouchables is what you reach. And then once you hit that, once people are willing to let down their guard, then you can get to building up. Then you can get to something that's greater. And so Jesus found that moment with the woman from Samaria. He found that wall, he broke it down, and then her mind was able to be opened. Because in just a few sentences, in just a few words, he didn't have to go through like the whole history of Christianity or God, or explain to her, oh, God created the earth and, you know, and all this stuff. And he didn't have to do all that. He was able to, in that moment, because he found her trust, he said, I'm willing to be vulnerable. Are you? Sometimes people won't be. Their walls are just too big, and it'll take time to wear down those walls. Jesus, very good at it. So he was able to do it very quickly and very effectively. So he was able to be vulnerable, and he was able to cross boundaries, which broke down those walls. And so he was able to impart this quickly. So I bet there's people in your life, like I just spoke about before, that match this design. Somebody came to you. They came to you. They came to your desk at work. They came to your house. They came up to you at the store, whatever it may be, and they said, hey, I'm coming to you. I care about you. I want to be a part of your life. And then they found something that you cared about. They said, oh, you like sports? So do I. A lot of this happens on the dating scene. For those who are out of the dating scene, you might have forgot this stuff, but this is stuff, kind of things that happen. I'm constantly dating Hannah, and I'm always trying to, so yes. Points. All right. Ding, 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 ding. So they find something that you care about. It's kind of like what speed dating is. Like you sit down with them, they came to you, and then it's real quick. You find out, what do you care about? And you know when those dates go bad is that when a person always talks about themselves, that's not good. So it's like if you get to a date and it's this person, you're like, oh, I'm trying to communicate with this person, but it seems to be like they only care about what they care about. So why would they care about me? So there's an exchange there. So you got to go and you got to find. They found you, this person, whoever the significant person was in your life, whether it's your wife or your girlfriend or whatever it may be, they found something that you were interested in. They say, I want to be interested in that too. Even if they didn't know anything about it, they're like, I'm going to throw myself in and try this new thing. What was my new thing? What did I try? I don't remember. It was so good, though. I landed that plane. We got married. It was good enough, whatever it was. So they found that foreign concept. And so to effectively communicate to somebody, you have to be able to communicate a foreign concept to something, to somebody that doesn't understand it. And I mean, in the literal form, it's like maybe they don't understand your language. Maybe you have to learn a different language, and there's some missionaries in the room, and they had to do that. They had to learn foreign languages to first to even be able to communicate on a very basic level. And then it expounded from there, because it wasn't like it solved. They learned this language, and they, oh, it said Jesus a bunch of times in a different country, and it worked. No, then they have to make a relationship with them. They had to say, hey, what do you care about in this land? I care about that too, or I want to learn about it because I care about you. And then it was able to, you're able to break down the walls, cross boundaries, and make some relationship happen. And that's where it really, learning about Jesus and telling people about Jesus, it always cracks me up when I drive down the highway and I see a billboard. This is great and all. I mean, it's not evil or anything, but I see a billboard. It's like, hey, you're all sinners. You're going to hell. You know? I'm like, that's not effective. That doesn't work. It's great and all. I mean, that's awesome. I hope it works for somebody. You know, that's a lot of money for not to work. But it's like $50,000, I think, to get a billboard a month. And so, depending on where it is. So, but yeah, it's telling people about Jesus and helping them understand a new concept, looking at them and saying, hey, I'm willing to jump into your mess. I know your life is messy. All our lives are messy. It's not pretty. You don't have to be perfect for me. But I'm willing to care about the things that you care about. And when you do that with somebody, you begin to have, you can see into their lives and you can take out the good. You can start pull forth the good. We'll always have mess. We'll always have those weird things in our lives that we can't shake or are always trying to shake. But there is those things that can be pulled forward. And when you communicate to somebody in this way, and you have those people in your life, I think anybody can think about this person, either that they've done it for you, or right now, you're doing that for somebody else. Whether it's a new coworker that's new to the building, new to the office, and it's awkward for them. They don't know what to do. They don't have any friends. Whether it's a new neighbor, we have a, moving into these apartments that we're in, great opportunity for us because we were the first ones moved in, so everybody after us is new. And so I can always walk up, hey, you're new? You know, you must be new. And they're like, well, I moved in. I was like, I was first, though, so I'm the original. I set the bar this low. and so it's a cool thing to be able to say, hey, you know, you're new here. I know that. Let me show you the ropes. So what do you do? What do you care about? You know, kind of a thing. And then I begin to be able to create a relationship with them. And it's just a simple fact of doing that is saying, hey, I care about the things that you care about and communicating in the way that even though I don't might understand it, you know, I can get a basic idea and I can teach me about it, please. And then it's like, hey, they feel like I matter to this person. Then it gives me an opportunity to speak into their lives and be able to draw out something great. So we live in a big city with lots of people. And we all do this on personal levels. And but the thing is, we're a church. We're here for a greater purpose, and we designed this whole thing for a greater purpose. So it takes, to reach a big city, it takes a big group of people, all in one accord, just like that team aspect that I was talking about earlier when you're playing baseball. It's something great to all to come together, to bring all your gifts together for a greater purpose. That's what we're doing here. We're all great. Y'all are all awesome people, very talented, way more than me. And I'm very thankful that all y'all are a part. But I wouldn't be doing you justice if I just let it in chaos. If I wasn't saying, hey, you have an awesome talent. Let me plug you in here. And so as we go towards this way, as we go to, you had the great opportunity to learn about Jesus. Let's give other people the great opportunity to learn about Jesus. Because there's a lot of great people out there that also deserve a great Savior. They also deserve redemption and purpose and things like that. So it takes a big group of people to do that. And as we gather, as this is happening, as new people jump on board, new people hear about Jesus and just find out that we're just fun to hang out with, I'll also accept that. And they come and they begin to realize, hey, this is awesome. I get to be a part of something greater. I get to be part of a greater team. So, which leads me to our second core value, and it's being community crafted. I talked about Christ-centered last week, and today it's community crafted. And we say community crafted because for us to put a church up and just say, here's a sign, this is just so you know we're a church, come to us. That is pre-Jesus. That is an old way of doing things. Jesus knew that wouldn't work. So he traveled to them. So we do meet here on Sundays. We do put a sign out there, but we also do things during the week. We also do things to reach out to people, and we'll talk about some of that stuff later. But being community crafted, and this is our second core value, it says, we engineered with the community in mind. We stay authentic in our community relationships by being committed to our mission in the community. We also create outlets that match the needs of our community in which we can walk Christ followers through open doors for action. So basically, that another full sentence is breaks down to, hey, we want to teach people about Jesus, so we find the things that matter to them. Are there people in need? Where are they? We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. It'd be one thing, like, we're not coming here and creating all these ministries that we don't even know that are needed here. When we first came here 2 years ago, when we started planting this church, the first thing we did was join associations that already existed to find out what matters to them. We were lucky enough to become chairs for the bicycle rally, which was a undertaking, and we survived. And because of that, some awesome people that we love very much have joined our family. and it was effective. It was what it was meant to do. And it was also an opportunity to show this community, hey, we love you, and we want to be a part. So what matters to you? So we joined in. There's been other things with the schools. Hamilton. Middle School over there, we jumped in with them first, and one of the cool things that we were able to do is, like, they join with this other thing called Rice Coalition that makes brown paper bags full of food for little kids to feed the homeless, people that don't have meals. Very simple, and we were able to jump in with them and help them make the sandwiches. The next time we did it, we bought all their bread for it because people gave and we're able to do that for them. So we're communicating to the community, hey, we love you. What do you care about? We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We already want to partner with those doing good. That is the best way for us to show the community that we care, is partnering with them and the things that they're already doing that are good. We'll have more opportunities and more things happening with that, so stay tuned. And as we, because we've positioned ourselves to be community crafted, we will also continue to strengthen that position. We will continue to refine what that is. We will look at what we've done in the past and we say, hey, were we effective in communicating that we love our community? Did we miss something? And we'll pinpoint what that is and we'll do better at it. And we keep doing that over and over and over again, and this whole community will know who Village Heights is. They will know that that is a group of people that really care about us, that really there for us. And it's not... I'm saying it's not happening now. It is happening now, and it's a cool thing. And Hannah and I always celebrate when we get a call or an email from somebody who says, hey, weren't you that church? Didn't you say? And they're remembering us, and they want us to be a part of what they're doing. And I know that they're wanting something, and that's fine. I want them to want us to be a part of what they're doing. And it's happening. I'm getting emails, and it's like blowing my mind that, like, hey, they remembered us. They know that we care. We only have so much to offer, but whatever we had to offer, God blessed it, and it meant a lot to them. We are breaking down barriers in this community. Village Heights is. We are doing that together. It's not just Hannah and I. It's us, because it takes all of us to do that. So in this practice, I have to ask something of you, because like I said, it starts with us. It starts with individually. Everything that happens in this church starts with us individually, and then it goes out from there. So first, I'm going to ask you to do one thing, and that is ask God to reveal the walls in you. Where are the walls that you've put up in your life that people can't get across? Because sometimes you go and you try to talk to people, and you try to break down their walls. You don't even realize that you have walls up that are stopping you from talking to them, whether it's racist, whether it's sexist, whether it's social, whatever, I don't know what the word is for that, but there's these things that block you. Says they might smell, they might talk too much. You know, there's things that in your mind that block you, says, I'm not interested in that type of person. And it's to make you uncomfortable. It's to make you comfortable, so you don't want to get uncomfortable and tear down that wall. So find those walls. If you can't find them, Jesus will find them. Trust me, and he will show you what they are. So ask God to show you what those walls are so you can begin to break them down that keep you from opening up to others. The second thing is ask Jesus to give you a heart for the people just like his heart. There is no heart that's more loving than Christ's. What he did for us on the cross is beyond anything that we could ever achieve for others. Not just the fact of dying, but the fact that he tore the veil down, he broke it apart, he gave us direct access to the Father through him, something that did not exist in the thousands, tens of thousands of years prior to Jesus. That was not an opportunity, but he made it. He made it one. So ask Jesus for the opportunity to have his heart for the people, because when you begin to see people through Jesus' eyes, the whole world lights up. You begin to see, oh, they're hurting. Oh, they need help. I'm not bragging on myself or anything like that. Just so you know, I don't do that, because I don't think highly of myself in that, and I'm above anybody. But when moving from the suburbs to the city, the count of homeless people shot up in my life. And And Jesus says, what you do to the least of these, you've done to me. And so when you see that person walking down the street that doesn't have a home, doesn't have food or anything like that, you're looking at an opportunity to bless Jesus. To say, Jesus, I love you, so I'm going to love this person. And just even the littlest things to show them that your life matters. And this is something very little that I do. When I drop Hannah works at Rice, and when I drop her off, I always take Gage to get donuts. He calls them donut hoes, but they're actually donut. I try to get it emphasize the L, son. The L, emphasize the L. And luckily, I order it for him so he doesn't offend the ladies at the donut place. But because of the position and where the Shipley Donuts is at, it's congregates around an area that very high homeless population. It's right there at 59 and Main. And when I drive through there, and I just see it. It's all over them. Destruction, failure, defeat. Like they don't matter anymore, or their lives. You look at them and they look down because they think that, you know, they feel lesser than you. And just because I have a car and I have money and stuff like that does not mean my soul is any greater than theirs. And so I take that little opportunity not just to you know, make myself feel good or them feel good, but also to show Gage, even at his age, he sees these things. He soaks it up that all people matter and to love all people. So I'll buy a dozen glazed donuts and I'll circle back around to where the crowd is and I'll say, hey, friends, here's some donuts. Have a great whatever day it is. And sometimes they'll talk to me. Sometimes they won't. That's fine. But, you know, I leave. Love you guys. Have a great day, you know, kind of a thing. And it's something small. And that donut probably doesn't even really help them. Maybe give them some calories, you know. But it what it does is it shows them, hey, there's someone that cares about me. There's someone saying that I matter. And that's a very basic level and a powerful level. And sometimes they talk to me and I have to hear some stories and some crazy interactions. It's never a dull moment. But seeing people through Jesus' eyes, that's what happens. You see the destruction in people's lives. You see it and you begin to find patience for them. You find that, you know what, my Starbucks really isn't worth that. I would rather give this to somebody else. You know, even it, like, I even go through the moments of, are they lying to me? Are they really homeless? Jesus said, what you do to them, you've done to me. So even if they're lying, you're still doing it for Jesus. So put yourself out there. Try to see people. Ask Jesus for his heart. And then the third thing, ask Jesus to show you where the next step is in your life personally. I'm constantly looking, praying to God, Lord, what's the next step for Village Heights? Where is that at? Where do we put ourselves in? And I rarely have to actually find it. God, he's like, well, here it is. Here's the next thing. Here's the next way to love the community. And it's been really easy as far as finding those things because I asked. In your life, ask Jesus on your daily walk, when you're driving to work, Lord, what are the ways that I can minister to people? What are the ways that I can find people to love? Show me. And be ready, because he's going to show you. It's going to happen. You're going to see that person that you had looked past for months, and it's finally going to be right in front of your face, and it's going to make you uncomfortable, but that's okay. If you're willing to dive into their mess, just like that pro athlete was willing to dive into some average teenager's mess and say, I'm going to pull greatness out of you, he was able to show me something awesome. If you're willing to reach into their mess, you can show them something awesome inside of them. And when you do that, you see the work of Jesus, because that's what he does for us every day. And man, that is so exhilarating. It gives you the adrenaline just to take over the world. You want to run in and just find all the homeless people and all, you know, and just dump out all your money. Don't do that. If you need advising on that, I'll help you. It'll happen. Just give the opportunity for it. So in talking about this, it would be wrong for me to not give you ways to be community crafted and how we're designing ourselves to be community crafted.
So we have... Oh. There. We we have a couple of different ways that we're going to do this. It's easy, like during the holiday season, to engage in stuff like this because people that we're already partnering with are already doing stuff. So the first one is at Thanksgiving. There is a community partner that we have, actually through Nathan. I'm pointing like Nathan was there. Nathan wasn't there. That was Jason. Nathan, who's normally there. That's called Dan's House of Hope. Mm-hmm. Hope House.
House of Hope.
House of Hope. And so what it is, I didn't even realize that this was an issue until talking with them. And you'll hear more about their story because we'll partner with them with other things. But brief synopsis of what they do. So if you are diagnosed with cancer and you are under the age of 18, there are all kinds of things for you, like Ronald McDonald House and different things like that, where you can go and stay while you're getting your cancer treatment. We live in Houston, so everyone from around the world comes here to seek treatment because we have the best medical care in the world. So if you are over the age of like 45 or 50, there's all kinds of things for you, like through Social Security and stuff like that. But basically, if you're between the ages of 18 and 45, tough luck, so sorry, find a hotel room. Which, if you're here for 3 months getting a chemo treatment, like, that's astronomical. So Dan's House of Hope was founded because the founders, their son, passed away from cancer. But this was really his, like, vision, was to have a place, a home. It's really, really beautiful when you go there because it's, like, the best house ever. Like, I want to move in. It's just beautiful and so peaceful and so loving. And the people that run it, they, like, make all of the meals for everyone that stays there. They help them with, like, getting transportation back and forth from the hospital. And it's just, it's a really, really beautiful, like, family community type place. So because they're making all of these meals for all of these people, at Thanksgiving, there are, you know, the holidays don't mean that cancer stops. So there are people that are there who don't get to spend Thanksgiving with their family, who don't get to enjoy, you know, a home-cooked meal. So they're doing the best they can to feed as many people that will be at the house and then people that are connected to the house through that. So we're still working out the details with them, but we told them that we would help with that meal. So there's that. And then here at our own home at Helms Elementary, it's weird to think of this in the Heights, but I guess it just so happens to be like where it falls that 75% of the kids that go to school here are either at or below the poverty level. So this is obviously a Title I school, right in the middle of the Heights. So, you said it to the team earlier. I was like, didn't you already say this? So there are some parents here. The PTA is amazing. They're the most, like, loving people. And, like, as soon as you walk in, they're like, hi, what's your name? Can we get you involved? Like, they just, they're real excited about everything they do.
We're taking some pointers.
Yeah. So they do, like, a reading program with all the kids, like, normal elementary school. Parents will come volunteer and read with kids. So one of the parents was reading with one of the kids and said something to her like, so when you go home and read your book, blah, 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 blah. And the little girl was like, oh, well, we only have one book at my house. And she was like, oh, like, you, no, one book in the entire house, like, one book. So the mom, of course, was like, oh, no. And she, like, we're getting books for all of these children. So Helms Elementary is doing a book drive for the holiday season for whatever winter holiday these kids celebrate to give them a gift to take home. So we are helping them collect, also, side note, this is important, Helms is a dual language magnet program, so it's Spanish and English. So by the time the kids leave here, whatever was their first language, they leave speaking Spanish and English, and it's amazing because, like, these children are bilingual. It's amazing. Anyway, so Spanish books or bilingual books are what we're collecting for the kids. And I think Summer said she was going to make a box, but if we don't have a box, it's fine. Summer is very detail-oriented and was like, well, we have to have a box. So we'll have some sort of box where you can put books for the kids. Reading levels at grade 1 through 5, anything Spanish or bilingual. And then the last thing that we're doing at Christmas time with Helms is their winter festival that's on December 12th. It's a normal elementary school festival where they have games and prizes and food and different things. And Bill went to the meeting, like the planning meeting for it, and they were talking about different donations that people have given. And this is not boastful about us. If anything, it's making fun of all these other places. We outgave all of their other sponsors because all of their other sponsors were ridiculous, like huge corporations that were like, here's $25.
Massive stores
that
make billions of dollars.
So we gave to it financially, but then we are also going to give them manpower. So we'll show up, we'll set up a booth with hot chocolate. Their theme is
Blizzard on Bayou City.
Blizzard in Bayou City. So it's so, so cute. And we'll give away hot chocolate. And then we also told them that they're partnering with, like, the high school and different things like that to get students to volunteer. So beyond the students and parents, we told them that if they needed more manpower, we would be here with hands and time for them. So those are, like, the three kind of big things out in the world that we are doing over the next few months. And then also kind of more, not necessarily internally, but more like family style, we are going to start doing monthly dinner parties. So the first one is on December 2nd at our house, apartment area, community room. And we'll come and we'll do dinner, and we may, like, everybody kind of bring something to add to it, or we may do the whole thing, whatever. But it's just going to be a time for all of us to kind of hang out, tell stories, live life, talk about our week, share a meal, because Lord knows we love to eat. That's what we do. So I think that'll be really fun. We'll do it on the first Wednesday night of each month. So we'll start that in December, and luckily that'll be far enough removed from the holidays that it's not like, add one more thing to your Christmas calendar. But we're excited about it because we like to eat, and we love to be with our family. So,
awesome. Yeah. So come out to our dinner parties. So there they are. There's our opportunities. That's what God's given us, to be able to love our community. And so help us all together come out to these things, spend your time, you know, just a little bit of time, not a lot or anything like that. I'm not demanding everything from you. I can if you want me to. But a little bit of time that we can put in just to show the community that we care about them and we love them will mean the world to them. For these little kids that get the books, it'll mean the world to them. They'll never forget, hey, somebody loved me so much that they gave me something. They thought about me. That the event, these people loved us so much, they gave us free hot chocolate and wanted to make our event more fun. And then we love you guys, and we love new people that are going to come to these dinner parties so much that we want to provide a meal for them. We just want to hang out with them. We want to hear from them what they care about. So it's opportunities. So any of those things you want to be involved in more or find out about or learn more about, please come talk to us. And I'll love to tell you all about it. And I'm going to pray, and then we're going to be dismissed. Thank you guys for coming. And remember to help us be community crafted. Lord, I thank you for today. I thank you for the opportunity to just spread your word, Lord, to spread your love, the gospel that you gave us to tell, Lord. It's an amazing thing, God. It goes, the power of it and the gift of it goes far beyond anything that we can imagine. So, Lord, I pray that this message will be implanted in our hearts, that we will not forget. It's not just about us, Lord, but it's about others, Lord. And that is the most powerful way to live our lives, as long as we're looking out to others. Give us the opportunities as a group and individually to just reach into messy people's lives and be able to help them see the good in them, to help them see the power that they have, that God has given them and blessed them with and created them with, to show them that purpose. Lord, help us just continue to design ourselves to be more effective in reaching this community, to show this community your love, to show them Jesus. Lord, we love you. We give you all the praise and all the honor. Amen.